stairs left us years ago. So there ain't no fake except the one you make. And there ain't no hell except the shit you take every day. So don't tell me life doesn't hurt. And then you don't need the people cause you've got your church. You gotta take your head out of the sky. Because there ain't nothing there but the satellites.
And we are the non-profits. I'm Dennis Lube, and along with Jeff D. and Russell Glasser, we're going to destroy the world unless you listen to our show. It doesn't matter that we're coming to you live on the 2nd of October, 2013, from an undisclosed location in Austin, Texas. The choice is yours. Listen to our show, or we shut down the world. This plot is sponsored by the Atheist Community of Austin, a secret international nonprofit educational organization with operatives on five continents. These individuals will stop at nothing to promote positive atheism and the separation of church and state. There's no way you can stop them. Even contacting the ACA voicemail at 512-371-2911 or visiting their website at www.atheist-community.org will not help you. Your part is simple. You give us your undivided attention every first and third Wednesday of each month at 7 to 8:30 Central Time, and certain events will not be set in motion that lead inexorably to global worldwide destruction. Remember, it's your choice. So, I strongly advise you to sit back and enjoy our show. It's a wonderful world we live in. It would be a shame if something were to happen to it.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
I'm going to proceed on the assumption that we're on the air.
I am all told right. that things are fine by people
all
in the chat
right.
room.
Well, which sure. our heroic crew have once again, against insurmountable odds, surmounted. Is that a thing?
Good for us.
All right. Here we are, the nonprofits. Hey, everybody. How you doing? Dennis, you okay?
Yeah, doing all right.
Russell?
Pretty good.
So we got some news.
We do,
and we've got some listener mail.
Yes,
and we got various issues to talk about. So we're good. Where do you want to start?
Well, how's everybody been
since 2 weeks ago?
Yeah,
good. I'm good. My latest Kickstarter project is the deadline for anybody who wants to back that happens to be midnight on Sunday Central Time.
Uh-huh. What is that?
The 6th. Again? That is recreating four different cover paintings from Advanced Dungeons and Dragons adventures that I did. I did those paintings originally in 1979, 1980, somewhere around there. And the originals have been destroyed, and D&D fans are backing my project so they can get great big posters signed by me of recreations of those paintings.
Right. Splendid. Reanimated art.
It's going well, but, the last few days were always tense. You're always terrified that people are not going to kick in the last bucks. If you fall even a penny short, well, you can't fall a penny short. It's all in round dollars. If you fall $1 short of your funding goal, you don't get any of the money, which is bad.
Are you short right now?
At the moment.
Oh, man.
We have 4 days
to
go.
Hurry up.
Well, maybe somebody out there will. Maybe somebody out there is interested in my work. Dennis?
All you 1%ers.
Russell asked me how I have been. I'll ask you how you have been, and then you can ask him how he has been. Because that's what we want to fill our airtime with.
I've been fine. I've been drawing pictures, and that's about it.
Awesome.
That's
we
my
have,
life.
Dennis and I have our weekly role-playing group tomorrow night. You're going to be at our weekly role-playing group, weather permitting.
Weather permitting, I will be there.
Ooh, how exciting.
It's not that I can't get there through bad weather. It's just my dog doesn't like bad weather, and I have to be there.
Dennis has a dog with a storm phobia.
Mm. Oh, yes, which is why he couldn't make it to the bat cruise.
That's right.
Which means one of these days you're not going to be able to make it to the show.
Probably. Try to give you another.
Well,
I have roommates at home that can, take those duties for.
All right.
So
we're only, twice a month.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And Russell.
Well, I made it to the Bat Cruise.
Yeah. So
and I
how
got
were
to,
you?
I got to introduce Kesey Myers.
Cruise. I was at the Bat Cruise as well. I didn't get to interview. What did you do? Introduce him.
So I didn't tell get to me do about that. The Bat Cruise because I sadly didn't make it.
It was dark and slightly drizzly, but there were still bats.
This is the same. Good. I haven't been for a few years, but last time I was there, it worked out the exact same way.
Hmm.
Some kind of serious rain beforehand. Clearing up exactly just in time for the cruise itself to be pretty much water-free.
Good.
Except for the
Thanks,
river.
No God.
Except for the river, which is, you know, you need that for the boat. And then...
No tornado struck you?
And then torrential downpours. Do we have a news story about a lightning strike on somebody?
Well, we do, but I also wanted to mention that while I was on the Bat Cruise, Karen Glasser, Karen Hawthorne, who used to... be on the show and is my sister.
Yeah.
Was having her baby, who is my
Really?
Nephew.
Right there on the cruise. I missed that.
She wasn't on the cruise. I asked her if she wanted to come, but she was not terribly enthusiastic for some reason.
We met a whole bunch of really nice people that came in from far away.
Yeah, it was great.
I met some folks from the East Coast, met some folks on the West Coast.
Yeah.
There was a fellow there. I'm not sure if he would want me to mention his name, so I won't. But he had met me years and years and years ago, back when I was working at TSR doing things like those paintings
cool.
I talked about. He came to a Gen Con game convention back when Gen Con was maybe a couple hundred people tops in the Horticultural Hall in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. And he played in my Villains and Vigilantes superhero game when, you know, I was maybe 19 or 20, and he was in high school.
Cool.
And he remembered me from that, and now he's an atheist.
Did P.Z. Myers make it to the...
P.Z.
Yeah.
Myers was on the boat, so
Excellent.
Was
yes.
Dave Silverman, president of Ooh. American Atheists, yeah. and well-known rage face.
I wasn't introduced to Dave Silverman. I missed out on that.
That's too bad.
I was introduced to a lot of pizza. that was good. There was food.
Yes. Oh, yes.
So was Ben. And then later that night, he was unintroduced to the same
poor
pizza.
Ben. He overdid it on the pizza.
Yeah. I'm not going to tell him I mentioned that.
It was a good time. Now, again, I've only been on the Bat Cruise twice myself.
Uh-huh.
But this time, the bats came over very low and directly over the boat. The previous time, you only saw them in the distance. It was still cool being out on the river because you could see them against the sky.
Mm-hmm.
But this time, they were, like, right there.
And it was cool hanging out with 100 atheists.
It was. We jam-packed that little boat.
Yeah.
Not that there wouldn't have been room for you, Dennis.
Oh, yes, I know.
Weather permitting. And then it stormed like the Dickens afterwards. Really, really seriously heavy downpour for Austin. Okay, can we talk about something?
As you mentioned, there was a noteworthy lightning strike.
Oh, some atheists got hit by lightning?
I would hate to be the guy.
The dregs of your delightful segue.
I would hate to be the guy hit by the non-noteworthy lightning strike.
Yeah.
That seems to me, anybody hit by lightning, that's noteworthy.
Yeah, well,
isn't
it was hit by ordinary lightning.
Almost by definition.
This one is particularly noteworthy in kind of a Schadenfreude way, since he was an employee at the Kentucky Creation Museum.
Oh, dear.
And he was apparently trying to close an attraction at the museum, presumably because it was... It was in the middle of lightning-ing.
Right.
And
God wanted the attraction open.
I guess don't use the zip line during a storm. But they do go out and try to take the zip line down during a storm,
and God
expressed his opinion about that.
Yeah, zip line's a long expanse of conductive metal?
Yes.
Oh,
so,
awesome.
So either God was expressing a general sentiment about the Creation Museum, or he was just saying he didn't want them to close that attraction.
Or he didn't like that one guy.
Or that one guy, yes.
Or he was being mysterious.
Yes.
right? This mysterious, I'll just do something random and let them figure it out.
Yeah, as Bill Hicks would have said, right?
I'll sit back with my popcorn.
I am killing me.
This is me doing my God impression. I'll just sit back with my popcorn. That's what God sounds like. And let them watch them run around like little ants trying to figure out the meaning of this random thing I done.
Did he also turn to the Nephilim and stuff and say, hey, y'all, watch this?
Yes. And hence the creation of the universe, yes.
So, yeah, that happened.
Yes. How did create the universe?
Well, is he okay?
Well, he said, here, hold my beer.
Really?
I didn't read that far.
Oh,
you know.
Of course.
I'm going to say...
You wish him well.
I'm going to say, yeah. Based on the fact that the headline was not museum employee fatally struck by lightning, that he's going to pull through.
I'm going to say that's not an assumption you can really make, because there's sort of an implication. A lot of people... Well, do people often... We know a guy who's been struck by lightning twice.
Yeah.
So far.
At least.
But that doesn't happen, so I hear.
It did. It happened to this guy. But what they say is it doesn't strike in the same place. He was in a different place.
Different place each time, yes.
So the man remained conscious but had trouble feeling his hand and was left with a tingling sensation in his arm. So that sounds distinctly less than fatal.
All right. Well, I hope that he recovers.
Hope he
fine from
full
that
recovery.
Perfectly random natural event.
Yeah.
Well, do we have any more creation science news? Any of our news stories?
Well, kind of.
We do?
Yeah.
Tell me about
it. What is it? It's
very mellow on today. I'm gonna do my radio voice.
Be mellow. Christian groups sue to stop Kansas schools from adopting science standards.
Okay.
Yeah,
because we can't have that.
No. Christian groups filed a pair of lawsuits in federal district court challenging the Kansas State Board of Education's decision to implement a statewide set of science standards.
And that's bad because?
Let's see.
What did they not like about the standards?
Faith groups are up in arms that their beliefs are not being given more credence in science classes. According to a statement on the Pacific Justice Institute's website, the teaching of science in all of the state's public schools could create a hostile learning environment for those of faith. The Institute, which purports to defend religious freedom, parental rights, and other civil liberties, is challenging the fact that the new science standards do not give equal weight to the Christian creation myth.
Right. And so the Muslim students, then, if these guys win, they can say it's a hostile environment
for Muslim students.
And
the
so
Hindu
on.
Students can follow suit. And then...
But is there any word on when this is going to be ruled upon? This was Arkansas, right?
No,
I'm
this
sorry.
Is
what did you,
Kansas.
What did you say? Kansas, sorry.
Kansas.
There's a K in it.
Yes.
There's also a Kansas in Arkansas.
Is there?
Yes, there is.
Kansas, Arkansas. Oh, dear.
Well, then I'm excused, then, even though I didn't know that. So it's an honest mistake, not just me being dumb.
Yeah.
We're not sure.
No, we're not sure. I don't know when this will come to...
Kansas, which has had just semi-annual dust-ups between evolution and creationism, right?
Yeah, weren't they the first standards? Ones to put, like, some kind of warning label on evolution textbooks?
Yeah. And a statement went on
Russell,
to say...
It's your shirt again, man.
The statement went on to say...
You possibly attach it to something that doesn't move around quite so much?
Teaching the materialistic, atheistic ideas to primary school children whose minds are susceptible to blindly accepting them as true is unconstitutional and dangerous, and therefore the new science standards must be stopped. Boy, irony much?
Quite a bit, yes.
Wow. You would think that it was the job of science teachers to teach children that science is true.
That science, yeah. But you must teach, well, they're saying that the science teachers must teach that creationism is true.
Or just as likely to be true.
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always thought that the job of a science teacher was to teach the methodology for acquiring reliable information, a methodology which creationists in no way at all follow.
Yeah, it's a violation of a child's right to teach them that creationism isn't true.
Wait, a child's right to teach them?
It's a violation of a child's rights to teach them that creationism isn't true. Yes, I didn't actually voice my commas there, but... Yeah.
Now, in the Bill of Rights, which right is that?
I'm unsure.
The right not to be taught that creationism isn't true?
I believe that's the 163rd Amendment. Implemented in 2319.
So you raise the specter of science and the scientific methodology.
Yeah.
Which is a nice segue into a thing that I'm wanting to talk about.
That is exactly what I was intending, somehow.
Was it? Okay.
No.
So, like, here's a thing in science.
Yeah.
We're gonna slide a little bit into scientific skepticism at the moment, right?
And then
I'll bring that back to something relevant, directly relevant to the show. Not that scientific skepticism ain't. So let's say you set up a test. You're testing for like I don't know, precognition or something, right? Doing a test of psychic powers, of knowing stuff is going to happen before it happens.
Mm-hmm.
And the way you do that is you have a random number generator that will give you a number from 1 to 100. And then on each test, you have your subject say what number they think is going to be generated.
Right.
And you do that 1,000 times. And 10 out of those 1,000 times, they guess the correct number.
That's probably worse than chance, but
I think it's exactly chance. That's exactly chance, which is unlikely that you'd get exactly chance. So you're sort of right, right? Because there's actually a range of relatively likely probabilities.
Yeah. You're right.
But there's a range of relatively. I mean, it could be they could have gotten 9 or 8 or 7. Or 11 or 12, and it still would have been within reasonable.
It's still relatively likely that you get the actual.
So you don't
statistical.
Psychic researchers who are biased in favor of finding evidence for psychic powers are famous for looking at those isolated hits, forgetting about all the misses, and saying, "Aha, we got proof." Is that particularly if the random chance happens to result in 11 or 12 successes, which is slightly more than perfectly mathematically likely.
Right? Yeah, but even but it's if random chance, it's so that's gonna, statistically that's gonna happen. Unusual, what you could get is like a guy like John Edwards who claims he's, you know, divining answers from the dead. And he records like 10 hours of footage and uses 30 minutes of footage where he seems to be making particularly impressive guesses.
Well, I'd like to keep this specifically to the example that I'm talking about because I'm going somewhere with this. But you're, of course, right. So you're not allowed to compile a bunch of statistics which show something. When you look at all the statistics, they show something other than what you want to conclude, right?
Right.
And then pick out those few hits that agree with your predetermined conclusion and say that that's proof that you're right, right? You're not allowed to do that.
Not if you want to be treated as a real scientist.
Right.
Or a rational person in general.
Right.
Okay. I have today's listener hate mail from around the world. And I'm sorry, you know, we kind of asked for it, getting into the whole men's rights thing. But I've only got one today. I'm going to hit this one point, and then we'll move on. Hey, guys, I heard you discussing Isaac's email on the show, and again, you're missing the point of the whole thing. You seem to be under the belief that gender rights are some uniform thing, but that's not it at all. Of course, women have less rights currently in some areas, Yet it's also true that men have disadvantages too, that something should be done about. And here's why I brought up that thing. I think that what our listener is doing is ignoring the statistics. Like when he says gender rights are not some uniform thing, he's giving himself the excuse to ignore the statistics. As a matter of fact, there is a uniform thing regarding gender rights, and that is, what are the statistics for how often women have an advantage and how often men have an advantage, right? There's a statistic there that is relevant.
Right.
What he wants to do is he wants to talk about individual hits and not look at the overall statistics. Now,
well, he wants to state that over any attempt to gather overall statistics can be invalidated by the use of one specific area, I think.
Well, but the question, I mean, we talked about this last episode, right? And the episode before that, and possibly the episode before that. The reason why we find the whole men's rights movement thing so distasteful, or one of the reasons, is that when you have a group that already has an advantage overall, efforts by people in that group to improve their advantage even more, right, that just looks like jerkitude, right? If you already have an advantage,
is striving for equality then considered, you know, if it impacts you in a positive way, is that then considered self-serving?
I think striving for equality when you're all... If striving for equality meant you're hunting for places where you have an advantage and getting rid of it, that's not self-serving.
Okay.
If you say you're striving for equality, but in fact what you're doing, you're finding you have an advantage already and you're finding places where you don't, and you're working on getting an advantage, you're getting equality there, eliminating inequality only in the places where you don't already have superiority, that's self-serving.
Okay.
Right? Is it not?
Well, everybody's striving for equality.
I do get that if you only look at individual issues, right, you can...
Yeah.
And you ignore the overall statistics,
right,
which is exactly what this listener is doing, then you can convince yourself that you've got a real case.
Sure.
But I think this listener is missing our point.
Mm-hmm.
And our point is, dude, you've already got an advantage. Relax. Okay? I brought up the whole psychic testing thing, right? Because it's an example I think a lot of us are aware of, and something we can where we can talk about, not make it not so much just about men, certain men, right, in a movement, but this is a natural human tendency. If there's a conclusion you want to reach, there is a natural human tendency to remember the hits and forget the misses, to want to forget the misses, right? To look at that, because that is a approach that will justify your viewpoint, no matter what your viewpoint happens to be. No matter how wrong you are, you can probably find isolated cases where it at least appears that you're right, and if that's all you'll talk about, that's an unfair analysis of the evidence.
Sure.
And that is the point I'm trying to make with this listener. Okay?
Yeah.
In the real world, you wouldn't expect, in a real world, you wouldn't expect absolute equity between men and women in all areas.
Right.
What you'd expect is men to have an advantage in some areas and women to have an advantage in some other areas. And if the statistics showed that that was the world we lived in, then I think it would be fine to relax about this whole men's rights issue and just go at those individual inequities and try to work on that to get more toward perfection, right?
Right.
But that's not what's happening here. There are, in fact, statistics available that show worldwide that men have advantages over women. I would direct our listeners to the Global Gender Gap Report. Global Gender Gap Report, first published in 2006 by the World Economic Forum, a Swiss nonprofit foundation of business, academic, political, and societal leaders. They compile statistics on the relative position of men and women across, I think, five different categories, and I should have brought this in, but I was in a rush. But there's political participation, economics, health.
Right.
That's three of them, right? And they report on this. And in the countries that did the best, like certain Scandinavian countries, that again I can't specifically name them, the equity is about 85%. Mm-hmm. That is to say, women have about 85% of the position that men have in the areas where there is inequity. And in the U.S., it's somewhere down around 74%, something like. You can look this up, Global Gender Gap Report. That is relevant, okay? Before you go freaking out about some isolated case where men have a disadvantage over compared to women, keep in mind, overall, globally, men have advantages over women. And getting all huffy about those isolated inequities really looks bad.
Is it bad, or does it just look bad?
I think that is a really good question. All right.
That's okay. Why I asked.
I think it is bad.
Okay.
I think that those issues should not be approached. I think that there's a fair way to approach those kinds of issues, right, where women have an advantage over men in a world where men have the advantages overall. I think approaching them as men's rights issues is problematic.
Right.
Just because the context is men already have an advantage, what are you doing?
Right.
Right. If they were simply fairness issues.
Right. Treated as one-off.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Not part of a organization, an organized.
And this might be why, again, we have not yet gotten an email from an angry person, angry about this issue, who will self-identify as a member of the men's rights movement, right?
Yeah.
It's the men's rights movement that has such a bad rep, and I think this is why. Because statistically, they're in the wrong. Statistically, they haven't really got an issue.
No, here's a question.
Women do.
Is there an official men's rights organization?
There are a number of actual organizations.
Okay, so you can't get, you know, cards.
They're
and
small.
Stuff.
And I want to say, I feel like it's not just because they don't think they have an issue, because there are lots of organizations that I equally well feel are all about a bunch of bullshit. The Tea Party would be one, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just from my personal perspective. But I want to point out that counter-argument, like public counter-argument and ridicule is an effective response to that in terms of making the label work or not work for people. I mean, like, for a long time, people were able to effectively slander the word atheist to the point where people who might actually be atheists would not be willing to self-identify as atheists. And it was only through sort of a concerted, like Richard Dawkins Out campaign, for instance, that atheists were able to be a little more publicly accepted than they used to be. I don't think that the practice of mocking the concept of men's rights in general is underhanded in any way. And I think it is, in some sense, a good idea and effective in making, in ensuring that people are embarrassed to identify.
Well, we're not saying that men's rights advocates eat babies.
No,
right?
We are not.
Or that they just don't want, they just want to have more rights so they're free to do whatever they want. You know, these kinds of bullshit arguments that were leveled at atheists.
Right.
We're not talking about that. We're talking about the actual statistics, what's really going on, and why we come down on the side of feminists versus men's rights advocates. It's because, statistically, women are at a disadvantage in this world right now. And
this
and the only reason to deny bringing statistics into the discussion, as this listener attempted to do, is because it makes men's rights advocates look bad.
Right.
Right. Then
they
are, and I will read a sentence.
Because they have their head up there.
I will read a sentence. If the feminist movement is actually about rights, then what is the outrage about men also wanting equal rights in the areas they're disadvantaged? Well, that's because if you are already at an advantage overall, and there's only a few places where you don't have your advantage, and you want to improve those areas, but I don't hear you lining up to get rid of the advantages you have in other areas, all you're trying to do is bring the average up more in your favor. And that's uncool.
Right.
All right. He goes on to say, I know everyone else said this too, but I'm generally not an MRA. I think their community has big problems, but they're not wrong in basic principle that men also deserve equal rights. You're right. Men deserve equal rights. They don't deserve advantageous rights, which statistically they have right now.
Okay.
That's I really would like us to drop this now. I mean, it's been fun, but I'd much rather beat up on, you know, one of these other groups we've gone on the record disagreeing with, who usually give us a hard time. But I'm sorry, there's really nothing more to say.
Here, I've got someone you'll enjoy beating up on more.
All right.
Okay.
Ooh. And uncharacteristically, I'm actually going to pull this story from WorldNet Daily. Because...
Oh, wow.
Because it is a slobberingly positive review about a new movie coming out.
Yeah?
Genesis 3D.
Oh, yes.
But what I really love about this review is the title, Watch Evolutionary Theory Crumble in 3D. Because somebody made a special effects-laden movie that
right.
goes over... You know, the Genesis account.
Oh, we're now.
You know what I think is really, really, really fun? I get Schadenfreude?
Yes.
Yeah.
Did I say that right?
Schadenfreude.
I get that little sort of guilty pleasure. Going over movies listed on Netflix.
Yes.
And looking at all the one-star ratings and all the angry negative reviews about pretty much every overtly Christian film made ever.
Yeah.
Right.
Except, unless you go back to the classics. Like, go back to Cecil B. DeMille doing The Ten Commandments.
Ten Commandments.
Right?
Awesome.
Those are good entertainment.
Yeah.
And they're sort of incidentally Christian, you know?
Yeah.
They're not preachy, like, at the end they want you to give up believing everything else. You could just as easily watch, you know, a Hercules movie from the same era, right? And get as much religious feeling from it.
You're watching a piece of fiction in the created, the created world has a god
now,
and all these other things going on. So
you and I watched Passion of the Christ together when it came out.
Yeah.
World building.
Yeah.
What I I feel like, I mean, I know that I could go back and read my blog review of how dumb it was, but it was still a well-produced and successful movie that might be one of the
which I'd
exceptions.
Never watch again, because it's not nearly as fun and adventuresome and exciting as even those, you know, those old classic Hollywood Bible movies.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Where there's occasionally some sword play and stuff. Ben-Hur.
Yeah.
Right? Ben-Hur is a good one of those. It's not even a Bible movie, but it's a Christianity movie.
The splitting of the Red Sea, man. It's classic cinema.
So anyway,
this movie,
I just wanted to say, I know.
I could actually see seeing this movie, maybe, if it's... But I'm suspicious, because the only reviews I'm hearing of it so far are slobbering creationists who say it's awesome.
It's not going to matter. It's not going to matter in the long
run. The incest with Adam and Eve?
In 3D.
And their children in 3D?
Yeah.
Ken Ham, who owns that creationist museum we mentioned earlier, says, It's like a time machine. It takes you back in history as if you were there.
Wow.
That was Ken Ham.
Yeah.
Well done.
That's great.
Thank you. Ray Comfort, now I just realize that I don't know how to distinguish my New Zealand accent from my Australian accent.
Just do the same voice. That in itself would be funny.
Blown away. The graphics are stunning.
Oh, boy.
And Alex Kendrick, who directs Christian Crap that Kirk Cameron stars in.
Yeah.
Said, this is the way truth needs to be presented. We're raising the bar.
Now, are there any actual clips from this? Can we actually see the 3D?
There's a trailer, but I don't know that... that's funny.
Unfortunately, we can't show it on
the still
audio
image
show
from the trailer shows
reasons.
A guy wearing 3D glasses.
So here's the question. When this movie, when the credits go by... Do they say that none of the characters in this movie represent real persons living or dead?
I don't know. Russell
don't
is
know.
Watching
I
the
mean,
preview now.
Do they run that
we are the nonprofits, but I'm going to break our rule, and I'm going to predict that the 3D sucks. And our friend Dennis here, who actually works in 3D graphics, can provide an assessment.
It's just a bunch of people talking.
It's a pretty real
so
Ken
Ham. Here we go. Here's some pterodactyls flying.
Uh-huh.
And oh God, that's fucking cheesy.
That was a lion. You would have expected a really good lion.
It's like one of those 3D cartoon TV shows. Well, that's pretty nice water. That's a nice dinosaur. Okay, I'm bored.
Yeah,
well,
it's.
But now I want to go back. I do need to make a caveat on my comment about Netflix ratings. Mm-hmm. Of course, Netflix ratings reflect what it has determined about the tastes of the individual customer.
True.
So when I see a one-star rating for this or that stupid Christian movie, it's that one might conclude that it's only because I don't like that sort of thing. However, that I have gone and read the reviews.
They
don't filter the reviews so that you only see reviews that agree with your viewpoint.
Right.
There's an actual overall response to these films, and oh wow, do they get throttled.
Huh,
it's
cool.
Amazing. All right.
Of course, there will always be the people showing up to counter the one-star reviews who are saying things like, I don't know what all the people are saying bad things about because this movie kicked some ass.
Yeah, but it doesn't help.
And these people are clearly front-loading this one by giving it great reviews in advance of it coming out. This movie doesn't seem
let's
to
not
have
be
a...
review. Let's not be doing what what's his name did in reviewing a movie before it comes out.
All right,
that
all
was
right.
Well, you can look at the trailer and say unimpressive.
Yeah,
yeah.
Mainly, yeah.
The trailer is unimpressive.
It's no Avatar. For, 3D quality.
Yeah.
Dennis, do you have some news for us?
I do. I'll have to bring it up on my electronic device. Yes, speaking of movies, Pat Robertson threatens legal action against filmmakers for exposing charity scam. Pat Robertson's Christian Broadcasting Network is already weighing legal action against two filmmakers over their documentary depicting the event, the televangelist's egregious misrepresentation of the activities of his charity, Operation Blessing. They are considering legal action against Zara Zizink and David Turner, whose film Mission Congo will hold its premiere at the Toronto International Film Festival over the film's supposed false and defamatory content.
They're considering it. How old is this new story? Do we have a date?
This one was pretty much 9/6/2013. I mean,
that's the sixth of the
story
of September.
Yeah.
Okay. Because it's been almost a month since then.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, if lies have been told about Pat Robertson, then they should be hit with defamation.
Mm-hmm.
If lies have not been told about Pat Robertson, then this is just a smokescreen being put up to dissuade people from seeing this documentary exposing his shenanigans.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. Basically, the accusations are all that his Project Blessing is not doing much, but it's more than helping needy people. It's helping his diamond mines.
Diamond mines.
Yes, his diamond mines.
We're not going to have a call from Pat Robertson to defend himself.
No, probably not.
I don't know what he would say. Probably tell us all about how great diamonds are.
They're forever.
Well, all right. Well, we'll be watching that story for developments.
Yeah.
Believe that film was going to be coming out soon, if it hasn't already.
Right. Unless he can stop.
Anybody here seen it?
No.
Okay.
Nope.
I'm going to do another listener mail. We're done with hate mail from around the world. Hey, my name is Adam. I am 16, and I am an atheist living in Northwest Arkansas. First of all, I really love your show. You guys make some really good points, and you're really funny.
Aw, thank you.
We're funny. My whole family is
trying everything.
Russell's not that funny. My whole family is strongly Christian, and it's very tough for me because they drag me to church every Sunday and Wednesday, and they are constantly trying to argue with me. And they pull the Pascal's wager argument. It does scare me sometimes when I think I might go to hell. Do you have any advice? Do you think it's wrong for my parents to force me to go to church to try to convert me? I'm sure I'm not the only one that is in this situation. Well, this is a subject... Excuse me. Burping. This is a subject that is near and dear to my heart, this whole threat of hell to try to get you to convince. Now, there's all kinds of answers on both sides of this question, right? Let's see if we can compile statistically what the correct answer is. On the pro side, he's 16.
Okay.
Right.
So on the question of do his parents have, is it wrong for his parents? Well, unfortunately,
in our
legally,
culture.
The fact is, legally in our culture, you're not an adult yet. And so there's not necessarily a whole lot you can do.
Right.
Unless they're actually abusing you, in which case there's social services, right? But you're probably not going to get social services to recognize being taken to a social event
like a church
twice a week is abuse.
Right.
Probably not. As annoying as it may be for you, they're probably not going to say that's abusive.
Right.
Now.
If they lock you in a cage and don't feed you, then...
Richard Dawkins is on record comparing religious indoctrination with child abuse.
Yes.
By which I don't think he meant... From comments he has made and answers he's given to people questioning him on this, he does not mean to say that it is a thing that necessarily child social services should... take kids out of those situations. He just means, in the broader sense, parents really ought to be educating their children in, you know, factual stuff and not indoctrinating them into believing stuff that is not backed up by evidence.
Yeah.
Any other comments about, do we think it's wrong for the parents? I mean, we certainly wish they wouldn't do that to you.
As, yeah, we do wish they wouldn't do that to you. As a parent.
We have to tread carefully here.
Speaking in my capacity as a parent, I tend to fall
our
on the side.
Our token parent in the group.
Yes.
Yes.
I tend to fall on the side that parents should have a lot of leeway while they are the legal custodians of their kids to make these kinds of determinations with the qualifier that parents really ought to be responsible enough to give their kids more and more freedom as they get older.
But that's
but you can't make them give the kids that freedom.
Right.
And in some cases, you've got parents who are the custodians of a genuinely difficult kid who needs to be forced to do stuff. Now
to do like normal, reasonable stuff.
Yeah.
So now, can I just interject? I do not have kids.
Uh-huh.
I once was a kid.
Sure.
I agree with saying that parents ought to have that authority because on a general principle that I think that when you have responsibility for something, you also need to have the authority to go along with that responsibility. You shouldn't be held responsible for something over which you don't have authority.
Yeah, I mean,
that's
child protective services shouldn't be like breaking your door down over trivial bullshit.
I'm not actually talking about that.
Okay.
I'm talking in very general terms.
Uh-huh.
I learned this in working for corporate computer game companies, right? Where I have been in positions where I had responsibility to like accomplish task X, but not, I had the responsibility to accomplish task X, but not necessarily the authority needed to get it to happen.
Right.
Right.
Right. That's so in a general sense across everything, parenting, business, personal relationships, everything. People who have responsibilities should have the authority that goes with that. Otherwise, it's unfair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I agree.
So I'm thinking that you got to draw the line somewhere, and I kind of think the line should be drawn when you're calling where you live a compound.
Did he say compound?
He did not. No.
Okay.
Dennis is saying, Dennis is saying there's things that could be evidence of abuse.
Across the line.
Yeah.
But with that in mind, having to go to church, see, if we were going to let people legislate over what the religious decisions are that parents would make, we would have a lot more cases of kids being taken away from their atheist parents than from their Christian parents.
In fact, that actually happens.
Cultural norms.
Yeah.
So as much as we hate to say it because we sympathize with this guy's position, the parents do have that authority over him.
Until
he's
18.
Exactly.
Right.
Which means you've got less than 2 years to go.
Yeah.
Adam.
And
hang in there.
Advice to parents, if you act like a tyrant until your kid's 18, there's a pretty good chance that your kid's not going to have any contact with you as an adult. And that's...
Really true, though, that at 18 you're able, for most kids, to actually cut those strings.
But, I mean, when they're an independent adult, if they don't have to be nice to you, then they won't.
Yeah.
And don't worry about hell.
Oh, yeah. So let's talk about hell for a moment. Threatening somebody into believing a thing is just fundamentally dishonest.
Yes.
Right. If they people
real.
Should believe things because actual reasons, not because of threats. You say Adam. You say you're scared sometimes, and you think you might go to hell. We'll just run through the litany of things we can say about this, right?
Okay.
Adam, are you afraid you might not get to go to Valhalla? because, you know, Odin and the Norse gods might be the real gods, and the, you know, the Odin, the head of the Norse pantheon, right, wants you to die bravely in battle and then join his forces in the Hall of Valhalla to fight alongside him in the Battle of Ragnarok. You're not afraid of that, right? The only reason that you're afraid, you feel any fear at all about Christianity and not about the Norse religion, is nobody believes the Norse religion anymore, right? But at one point and at one place in the world, that was considered the unquestionable fact. So Christianity is on its way to being taken only as seriously as people take the Norse religion now. You already realize it's not true. Just relax, accept your conclusion that it's not true, and that fear should fade.
And, I mean, I really like the Homer Simpson quote. I think it sums it up pretty well. What if we pick the wrong religion? Every week we're just making God madder and madder.
That's correct. That's the right. the answer to
and,
the...
And you can't be... You cannot be afraid. It would be unreasonable to try to live your life being afraid of what, you know... of what Horus thinks, of what Zeus thinks, of what Odin thinks, of what Allah thinks, right?
You got to believe them all, just in case.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to go with it, because the apologists love to dismiss this argument by saying nobody believes in Thor anymore. Lots of people believe in Islam.
There are some that do.
And
Islam, but my point is that
Muslims
there's religions...
Do not think Christians are going to heaven.
Right. And there, so there are not just dead old religions you don't care about. There are active living, you know, religions with millions and millions of adherents that you're not afraid of in hell. Right. Same thing. So hang in there, Adam. You don't have that much longer to go. You know, they're being dishonest in their attempts to convert you. Feel free to be dishonest in your reactions to that, right? Go ahead and pretend like you believe, if that's what it needs for you to survive in that environment.
Yeah,
I'm not a big fan of lying, but I am a fan of people triumphing against injustice and dishonesty.
Yep.
And lying is a tool.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, there is no commandment or hell for lying. If there truly is no God,
yes,
then lying and not being caught has no punishment. And what you're saying, Jeff, is that it's not even necessarily that ethically questionable if it's for a good reason.
Right. Right.
Hmm.
Situational ethics, right?
Yeah.
If the situation calls for it, right, really, as long as it's ethical in that situation, then... You know, do what you need to do. All right. Who's next, Russell?
So
I think it's your turn.
News? Was that the end of this guy's email?
Yes, Adam sent us a very short email.
Okay. Thank you, Adam.
Hang in there, kid.
Good luck.
You'll be okay. We soon.
Let's see. It's, you know, time for the war on Christmas to start pretty soon.
Oh, good.
How are our forces disposed for the season of the war on Christmas?
Well, I've always pointed out that the so-called war on Christmas is a misnomer because it's really a war by Christians against every holiday that isn't Christmas.
Right.
Uh-huh. Case in point.
It's the, what do you call it, the Christmas offensive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, what's the latest in the Christmas offensive?
Case in point, a Hobby Lobby store, which is a well-known bunch of fundamentalist fuckheads. In New Jersey, a customer was asking for some Hanukkah merchandise, and the clerk there told him, "We don't cater to you people."
Ah.
Ugh.
You hear the Christian line.
This would be Jewish people we're talking about.
Yes.
Because they do the menorah Hanukkah thing.
Uh-huh.
And then the founder, David Green, kind of seemed to back this up because people weren't carrying Hanukkah items since Mr. Green is the owner of the company, he's a Christian, and those are his values. They had to then release a statement, kind of walking it back a little bit, saying Hobby Lobby Stores is currently working with our buyers over our merchandise selection. Due to multiple requests, we are currently evaluating our holiday items and what we will carry in the future, and blah blah blah. And of course, this statement only came after a couple of days of incredibly bad press.
Yeah.
For Hobby Lobby, and I would imagine the whole
"it's damage
you
control"
people phrasing didn't help very much.
Yeah, Hobby Lobby has long been known to me as the craft store. You know, as an artistic person, I am sometimes interested in some art supplies.
Oh yeah,
it's the place you can't go on Sundays
because
they close. They're closed on Sundays.
Well, don't go there any other day, okay?
There's some.
Go to Michael's.
There's Michael's. There's Jerry's Artorama here in Austin, which is kind of awesome.
Oh, he's went to Austin Books and Graphics.
Austin.
No, not Austin Books and Graphics. What is it? Austin Blue.
Miller
Blueprint.
Miller Blueprint in downtown Austin. There it still is.
They have scanned
some large artworks for me.
Yeah.
Things that are too big to fit on my scanner.
Yep.
Dennis, you got some news?
No, I'm out.
You're out. I'll go on to another
you had
short
some that I was going to read originally.
No? Never mind. Are you questioning Dennis's veracity?
Are you questioning me?
Are you threatening me?
Greetings from Australia. Should I do it? Just to be fair, should I try to do a really painfully bad Australian accent? Maybe I should have you read this.
I can do it.
He would sound just like Ray Comfort and who's that other prick?
Ken Ham.
And Ken Ham.
Ken Ham.
No. Let's go without.
All right.
Besides, given the content of this email,
he doesn't want to
maybe I don't want to do a voice. I have just a quick question. How come whenever the Pope phones into your show, he sounds like Triumph the Insult comic dog? Enjoying your return, Maynard in Australia. Well, that I think the correct answer to your question, Maynard, is because Triumph the Insult comic dog sounds kind of like Antonio Banderas. Because it's Antonio Banderas that we think the Pope sounds like when he
should sound like,
scare quotes, calls in to our show. Because honestly, I thought about doing the Pope as more of a Cheech and Chong kind of thing. I think it's funnier when he has that
suave
kind of feel to him.
Debonair. You know?
Yeah. He's the people's Pope, but he sounds kind of snooty. It's kind of a Hispanic snooty.
I'm the Pope.
Right.
The people's Pope.
Yeah. Okay. So that was that. You got another news?
There you go. And I think, as we discussed before, we'd like to do a Triumph the Insult Pope, but then we'd have to actually come up with better jokes than we're capable of.
I need some holy water. Shaken, not stirred.
You're atheists. You can be forgiven without God. You can get God's blessings for me to poop on. That's Antonio Banderas. He's not quite the Triumph the Insult comic.
Yeah, not exactly.
You have any gray poupon?
You have a very nice radio program for me to poop on. So that's Triumph.
For me to poop on.
For me to poop on. Thank you for your letter from Australia. Okay. And I meant to follow up with something funny, and I couldn't think of anything.
I know, it's hard.
All right.
That's why The Daily Show has writers.
From the ass end of the world. Okay, go ahead.
All right, we go now to another ass end of the world.
Thank you, Peter.
Oh, cool, nice segue.
Specifically,
incidental segues is
a shopping center in Nairobi, Kenya, where this
grief
is not a funny story,
No.
So there was some shooting.
I think anybody following the news has heard about this.
Yeah, this guy was interviewed walking to his car with two daughters when the shooting started, and they heard a lot of automatic rifle fire and grenade blasts. And people were being hit by bullets all around him. And apparently, before the shooting, let's see, there were dozens of customers in the cafe, a hangout for well-off Kenyans, diplomats, and expats. So I shouldn't call it the ass end of the world. It's just some ass things are happening there. Found themselves running toward the attackers in the main hall. Among them was a Kenyan Indian woman who asked not to be named. When she realized her error, she turned around but had been separated from her sister. The cavernous interior, crisscrossed by escalators, was reverberating to the sound of gunfire and explosions. On the second floor, Joshua Hakim, who had stopped for a snack on his way to watch a rugby match, saw gunmen, some of whom looked to be teenagers, strapped with ammunition belts, carrying AK-47 assault rifles. They were firing indiscriminately. Yeah. They shot a bunch of people, he said, and during a lull in firing, the attackers called out in Swahili, a language widely spoken in Kenya and the rest of East Africa, for Muslims to identify themselves and leave. So this does appear to be somewhat religiously motivated, and actually there are other reports that they came and quizzed some of the individuals. Like, they went up to an Indian man and said, what was the name of Muhammad's mother? And he couldn't answer, so they shot him.
Oh. Right.
It's a good thing they... Well, okay, here's my tasteless thing for the episode. Ready?
Go for it.
It's a good thing an incident like that didn't happen with Christian shooters at a mall here in the U.S. because they would find that the...
Yes.
And more atheists would have survived because we can answer those technical questions about the Bible because we know more about it than most Christians do.
We've actually... Right. Many of us have read the damn thing.
There's my tasteless comment for the episode.
But also, it couldn't have happened by a Christian shooter, because the moment the Christians started shooting, they would retroactively cease to be a true Christian.
Right.
If we let them play that card, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's crap.
Yeah. So what is the reported motive for the...
The word motive does not appear in this article.
Wow.
So,
has anyone of you stumbled across a news story reporting a motive for that shooting?
No.
I can't really hunt around.
There is a lot of sectarian violence and ethnic violence and so on in certain places in Africa, and it's terribly sad.
Yeah, but these killers did employ a kind of filter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's clear, there was clearly a religious element to their motivation, whatever
the
core of it is. What?
Unfortunately, while Googling it, I found how useful Googling things is during the show, since I came across a blog that says he has absolute proof that the Nairobi Mall massacre is a Zionist hoax.
Oh,
fuck
boy.
You, blogger.
All right. Let's see how we're doing on time. Ooh, that didn't tell me.
Got 27 minutes is what it looks like to me.
All right. Well, I got
this
a longer...
show's too long.
I got a longer listener mail raising a more subtle issue that maybe
all
we
right.
can spend some time on.
Okay.
Hello, nonprofits. I'm so glad the shows have resumed, and I have really enjoyed the recent discussions. Well, we're glad that you have resumed listening. I'll skip to the end. It's Matt in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, who gave us permission to mention his name. We're glad you're back listening to us, Matt. I have a question that never seems to get addressed, even though it seems extremely pertinent to our objections to religions, especially monotheistic ones. Is it ever moral to worship a person or God? It seems to me that the very concept is immoral to its core. It is acknowledging an inherent inferiority or state of subjection to an authority. It is a slave mentality and establishes the framework for unquestioning authority and dogmatism. We recognize that any human that craved worship would be a narcissistic fool at best, and at worst a dangerous psychopath with totalitarian ambitions. I realize that this is just anecdotal, but in my conversation with Christians, I've found that they often have real trouble justifying the concept of worship when it is pointed out to them, and definitely experience cognitive discomfort when forced to think about this in depth. They seem to recognize that worship is obviously immoral and dangerous when it is a human-to-human, in a human-to-human framework, but then they have to engage in all sorts of special pleading and awkward might-makes-right foolishness to justify it when one of the characters is a powerful supernatural entity.
Right.
My own wife is a recovering Christian and tells me that even when she was religious, she could not understand why a God that has any moral or ethical worth could ever desire to be worshipped in the first place. I think we atheists often erroneously address this problem by saying something like, even if the Christian God exists, I would not worship him because, insert example of God's cruelty or immorality from the Bible here. I've heard this done several times by the hosts on The Atheist Experience, and I agree that these are relevant considerations, but why are we passing up the chance to go after the very concept of worship? That seems to be the heart of the problem. I've actually heard Matt Dillahunty start to say that he might not worship this God even if it was a respectable character, but then he never gets into the topic. Well, you know, you really ought to take that up with Matt on his show. Even if it seems obvious to us, I think that many believers have never fully considered this major flaw in their worldview and would benefit from an in-depth exploration of the topic. This is a discussion worth having, and I'd love to hear your thoughts. Now's your chance, Matt. Okay.
Wait.
Comments.
See, okay. There's something that bothers me about the way this email was framed, because he's asking us to make a judgment call on the absolute morality of a particular category of actions.
Yeah.
And, I mean, this seems to be kind of symptomatic. I mean, you know, I'm a person who never used to be a Christian, and I've observed a lot of ex-believers who still want to hang on to these kind of absolute certainty judgment calls about this kind of thing. I mean, it just kind of rubs me the wrong way.
All right, so pose us an example of a case where character A worships character B, and that's totally cool.
It's not so much that I think it's right for character A to worship character B, is I don't think that the act of worship is necessarily
all right.
The primary problem that he makes it out to be.
I apologize for making it sound like I was asking for a scenario where you think it's laudable for character A to worship character B. I'm just asking for a situation where you think it's all right. It's not, amoral, right? Not, neither good nor bad, but simply there.
Well, I mean, first of all, I would argue that the person doing the worshiping of character B is in many cases being naive and doing something unnecessary. But it's if character B encourages or requires the worship in some way, that something actually immoral is happening there.
And then the immorality is on the part of the person demanding the worship?
Yeah, I mean, if a person said, you know, hey, I worship Ayn Rand,
yeah.
which many people seem to, it would be...
Now's the time to get on your email accounts there, Objectivist.
Yep. I would say, well, your worship of Ayn Rand is bullshit because she said some really stupid things. But I wouldn't say the worship of Ayn Rand is immoral in some way.
Well, to play Matt's advocate. I'm sorry, Dennis, go ahead.
If I may weigh in on this.
Please.
The act of worship pretty much has to include the act of faith. You know, you're because faith and worship, pretty much, you can't be moral if you're worshiping someone. You cannot be moral
because you've abdicated
your moral choices to the thing you worship. Mm-hmm. You are now, you know, you've confused obedience with morality.
But again, is it immoral to do that, or is it amoral to do that?
That's a good question.
Is it actually bad? Because there could be an authority that
is
morally really is on the right side, right, of issues. And then if you chose to worship that...
But the thing is, you don't care.
Well, what if you chose to worship that?
Yeah, but okay, let's look at it this way. Your problem with worshiping
somebody.
You can't
be said to have made a moral choice.
Your problem with worshiping somebody seems to be that you're abdicating your moral decisions and picking somebody else to make moral decisions for you by proxy. But you could pick somebody who tends to make better moral choices than you would make if you were in charge.
Yeah, but you would be immoral. Amoral.
Amoral. That's the point.
Right. And I think that
I have to say amoral.
I think that may be where the conversation is going.
You have no morality
Dennis, that you don't care, and that's but. The exact opposite of that is the observation of the exact opposite of that point is something often trotted out by us atheists regarding Christians, right? Where Christians say, I don't decide what's right and wrong. God does. He's the authority.
Right.
But we point out to them, when you decided you were going to follow the God, you did make a moral decision.
Right.
Based on what you knew about that God, you made a moral decision. You can't abdicate all responsibility to him, right? Now, it's certainly true, some people can just be indoctrinated into that and never have had that thought.
Right.
And
yeah.
You're making is correct.
I guess deciding to worship a thing, there you're making a moral choice. You're making a moral choice to abdicate your morality.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Wow.
Isn't
it true in the real world that we use some moral rules of thumb all the time? We don't necessarily always think through the moral implications in detail of every single action we take.
Yes.
So, again, I'm actually arguing against Matt.
Okay.
I was his advocate a second ago. To that extent, if you identified a moral leader, a moral paragon, who you took a good look at, made the decision, I'm going to trust that person's moral judgments all the time, all you're doing is saying, my rule of thumb for morality is going to be do what that guy says.
You know,
I have looked at him and made the judgment call that he exhibits morally good choices.
I've got people in my life that I feel are often better informed about a lot of issues than I am. So when I make a moral choice and then my friend comes up to me, I mean, I won't name anyone in particular, but
right,
a person I know who I've found to be a good judge in the past comes up to me and says, hey, you really did a bad thing there. Some of my natural tendency to defend myself is at least slightly overcome, where I think, gosh, this guy usually knows what he's talking about. Could I be wrong here?
But that's not worship.
No, it's not worship. But if I were a lazier person and I had made that determination, and I didn't really want to think about these things, but I felt that this person had all the right decisions, I could choose to worship him. I, the real Russell, don't approve of that, but that's not necessarily an immoral decision for a lazy person who might make worse choices.
No, immoral. The word you use there is immoral.
Well, he was asking, isn't that the ultimate immorality? And that's what bothered me.
I think, I'll just try to sum up where I think our discussion has gone. We don't agree that worshiping some third party is necessarily immoral. It could be immoral if you thought about it and decided, you know what, that paragon that I'm going to worship is a paragon of immorality. That for sure would be immoral, right? I'm going to worship Adolf Hitler, because he's everybody's favorite.
Right.
All right, bad guy. That would be immoral. If you knew in advance that where that was going was to lead you down a path of immoral behavior because of following that entity's lead.
Right.
But if you had thought about it in advance and and decided for yourself after reasonable consideration. That paragon, the person that or entity that you're going to worship, really does exhibit reliably morally positive behavior.
Sure.
That is, at worst, lazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because you've stopped thinking about these things for yourself.
Which means it is amoral. Because you're no longer making moral decisions. You're just following the dictates of
amoral.
The thing you worship.
But if it was a moral decision that got you there, that's just lazy. I think it's lazy morality instead of...
You would then have to lump all your subsequent actions into that one decision to follow.
You would. It's very lazy. but to me, completely amoral would be you got entity A... who's a paragon of morality that you could look at and say, wow, I've never caught that entity making a moral decision that I disagreed with, on a deep level. And then you have entity B that is totally amoral, and it's like, wow, I'm going to follow that and just do all these bad things at that guy's guidance. And then there's entity C... who's just, like, goofy.
Flips a coin for everything.
Right. And you flip a coin, a three-sided coin, to choose between those three entities, right? That's completely amoral. That is where you don't care.
Right.
So it could be an immoral choice that leads you to follow a moral paragon if you arrive there by not thinking about it.
Yeah, but, you know, once you're following this moral paragon, You ask yourself, should I do this thing? Well,
what does Bob say?
What would my moral paragon do?
What would Jesus do?
You know, what would Jesus do?
Right.
And you almost made a moral decision, but at that point you went, no, what would he do? You know,
agree that from that point on, as far as your moral decisions go, you're being amoral because you're not making decisions to yourself. But if the decision to follow that entity was based on a reasoned analysis of its morality, I'd say you're lazy to stop thinking about things yourself at that point and latching on to that other character.
But that decision
itself could be a moral decision.
Following orders is not a good... Yeah.
I think none of us in any way think it's ever a good idea to engage in the worship of anyone else.
Yeah, no.
Not because it's necessarily immoral to do so.
Right.
It is amoral once you're doing it. Amoral.
Right.
Right. That is to say, you are no longer thinking for yourself.
Here's another question.
But not thinking for yourself is neither moral nor immoral.
Here's another question. Is demanding worship moral?
Yeah, that is a much better question.
I'm pretty sure
that's immoral.
We'll spend a few minutes on it, right?
Yeah.
Can we imagine a situation? Case? Well, demanding worship. Now, we've focused really heavily on this morality thing. There's more to worship than just following the moral teachings of and the moral guidance of, right? Worship can also be singing songs of praise to.
Give me stuff.
Oh, sure.
I'm feeling a bit better. Can we trade places for a while?
Right. I'm getting very tired of this. That's just what I said. And that movie is called
Bedazzled. The original version.
The original version. Dudley Moore and
awesome.
That other guy.
Yes. Yeah.
Although I did enjoy the remake. I know you didn't. But anyway.
Not nearly as much. Could there be a moral reason? Well, what if you had... I think there could be a moral reason to demand compliance with your moral decisions. That's kind of like law. But that's not worship.
Right.
So that's just an element of the... That's why I want to bring on board all these other things that have to do with worship besides following moral teachings.
A guy on parole...
Yeah.
The judge says, you know, I'm going to take you back to jail unless you act in this particular way. That's not really worship.
But that's not worship. That's one element of. Now, if that judge said, and you're going to sing praises to me, and you're going to give money to my organization.
Now you're getting into pretty shady
and if
territory.
I don't care for you after, if I don't think you've sufficiently towed the line, I'm not just going to send you back to prison to serve your sentence. I'm going to sentence you to a totally unreasonable, eternal torture.
Well, that's not a necessary component of worship.
I think a necessary component of worship is whatever the entity that you're worshiping chooses for you, you've got to accept that and go along with it.
So you're...
So I'm just using an extreme example.
So the person you worship is really more of the dom in your relationship.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's a reason why we atheists like to trot out the analogy of, nice soul there, pity if there's something was to happen to it.
Right.
Right? I mean, there is definitely a organized crime / criminal syndicate.
Protection racket
thing. Yeah. Yeah, right. That's specifically what that is.
Don with an N where I said Dom.
Oh, Dom with an M.
Dom, as in a sub-Dom relationship.
Okay. Which, are those immoral?
Not if the sub is voluntary, but...
Well, we're to worship if it's voluntary. Does that make it okay?
Well, we were talking about if somebody demands you worship them, but the question is...
Before, now we got to get back to the before, because that's relevant to our earlier discussion.
So
right?
If you have a sub-dom relationship where both parties have entered into it willingly, again, that's amoral. It's, it's what they want to do.
It is not necessarily wrong, but of course it's not especially right.
Right.
So it's neutral. It's morally neutral. Okay, agreed.
Right.
All right, so back to demanding worship. I'm racking my brains. Yeah. I cannot think of an example where demanding worship is morally okay. Because you just said it when you're talking about a submissive relationship. That's... Uh-huh. As long as it's mutual, right? Mutual consent.
Slavery is wrong.
Slavery is wrong, and slavery is the example of forcing people into a position of servitude or obedience against their will. Right. So there you go. Matt, you've had our... Matt in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, you've had our long discussion of... Is that moral or not? The issue lands most squarely on the shoulders of the entity demanding the worship. If the entity doesn't demand worship, and the worshiper chooses to worship, right? We all agree you can't really say that person is being immoral. They are being, at worst, amoral, just choosing to live their lives in a way that is neither inherently right nor wrong in a moral sense, but they are certainly abdicating their own freedom to make their own moral decisions in future if the worship includes following the moral teachings of, which seems to be a pretty common thing.
Yeah, but you get into the messy... I mean, is that not exactly what happened, in the... Nazi Party in World War II.
Yes, but again,
they happened to be worshiping Nazis.
Yes, they did happen to be. And the question from Matt is worship inherently immoral, no matter who it is you might wind up worshiping? If I think you could probably think of the person you believe is the most moral of anybody you ever met, right? Worshipping that person would not necessarily lead to Nazi Germany.
Right, but...
Okay, so that's why we're not agreeing that it's inherently immoral. Even though there are certainly examples of that leading to terribly bad things. It could lead to better things than you'd get otherwise. It's possible.
Yeah, I can't help but thinking that the probability of worship leading to bad things is such that it is, as a rule of thumb, immoral.
I think we would require some statistics there.
Okay.
So that would be a cool thing to bring in next week.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know where you get statistics.
I don't know what the search criteria would be.
Polling company.
do you agree that in theory it doesn't have to be inherently immoral? In theory, person A could be less moral than person B, and deciding to worship person B and follow moral, person B's moral teachings could result in an improvement morally overall in actions. Doesn't this happen every time? Like Russell's example of accepting moral correction from a friend who he respects for their moral insights, right? Happens at that level all the time. There are certainly people who are more with it morally than others.
But I'm sure he would ask for reasons.
I would, but
yeah.
But even if you didn't, been down even this road.
If you didn't, then you're demonstrating that you don't care.
Then that's amoral,
right?
Not immoral. It's a tricky line because none of us like amorality in a general sense.
Right.
I mean, we have to recognize there are some things, like we mentioned, the dominant versus submission relationship.
Is amorality immoral?
No, I would have to say no. I mean, amorality is stuff that you really can't say is moral or immoral one way or the other,
mm-hmm.
right? It's just not part of the... It's not on the same scale.
Right.
All right.
Okay.
Are
we going to move on?
I'm not sure we have time to move on.
We've got a few more minutes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, just a few.
You got anything?
Just a few. Got some.
Well,
here's
an example of somebody right now who demands worship of his God.
By the way, Matt, thank you very much for your letter. That was very interesting to discuss.
Fascinating. Christian TV host asks God for military takeover of Obama's presidency.
Oh, yeah.
This is from Raw Story, which is not a terribly hard-hitting news source, but hey. Christian TV host this week called on God to consider a military takeover of President Barack Obama's government. Does God have a military?
Wow.
I mean,
I bet a lot of people with guns think they are God's militia.
There's in Africa, speaking of the incident in Kenya, there's God's revolutionary army, God's something army. That goes around killing people because they want to impose the Ten Commandments.
Right. Okay.
Those people say they're God's army.
Those guys could come over maybe and take over. But
yeah. Well, there's people who consider themselves onward Christian soldiers. You've heard song, right?
Yes.
So there are people who certainly believe they're in the organization.
On his Monday internet broadcast, Morningstar TV's Rick Joyner predicted that democracy was doomed unless the Lord imposed martial law.
Is our democracy more doomed by, I don't know, this program is a production of the Atheist Community of Austin, and the Atheist Community of Austin is politically neutral. But what's going on right now is there's a threat to our democracy.
I believe this was in reference to that, in fact. But yes,
arguments can certainly be made on the other side.
Right.
Yes, arguments like God, come take over.
Yeah,
with martial law.
And by the way, this is just a community service of the nonprofit's audio program.
Yes.
Healthcare.gov is where you need to go if you want to check to see about the availability of less expensive health insurance than you may have had in the past.
A fine public service.
And at the
today.
Moment, I have not successfully made an account for myself at healthcare.gov because it's being totally swamped by millions and millions of Americans wanting to get involved, and I'm sure that problem is going to be, I think it's reasonable to assume that problem will be solved eventually. Yes. And anyway, you've got till January before anything really happens. So no pressure.
Yep.
But you might want to bookmark that URL, healthcare.gov.
Yes.
Okay.
I think we're out of time.
You think so?
Aren't we?
Oh, just about. This has been a fun program.
Yeah.
Quite so.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. We appreciate each and every one of you. And like we tried to say last time, even those of you we don't agree with, right?
Yeah.
We're maybe a bit intemperate with our language periodically,
yes.
But we try to present our viewpoints in a reasoned fashion have the intemperate language for spice.
Yeah.
To add a little excitement to what would otherwise be dry philosophical ramblings.
Correctly describe our passions for this, what we're talking about.
Yeah. Yes. So thanks each and every one of you for watching, and we'll let Dennis go now with his thing.
All right. So, that was our show. Now, that wasn't so bad, was it? If you know what's good for you, you'll be here again in 2 weeks, on the 16th of this month, for another episode. If not, well, there won't be a next time.
Bye, everybody.